Welcome back to another action-packed episode of Taxed Enough Already, where we only talk about the exhilarating topics of economics, high finance, and taxation. I'm your host, Dan Newwash. In this episode, my colleague and our Director of Operations, Jesse Somdahl, and myself discuss a recent IRS ruling that was released earlier this year in April. This ruling is a massive win for employers and employees, and it specifically relates to and solidifies the validity of a tax plan we utilize called a PTR plan or payroll tax reduction plan. If you're an avid follower of this show, you've heard us talk about a PTR plan before, and we do briefly cover the mechanics or how a PTR plan works in this episode. But if you want some further insight into the plan, the benefits it offers, and the data-backed positive effect it has for employers, you can go back and watch episode 10, where we do just that. As per the norm, we do have some visuals as a part of this episode. So if you're listening to it in its audio or podcast format, I'd encourage you to view this on our website, Rumble page, or YouTube page to see the video version.
The IRS, Department of Health and Human Services, the Employee Benefit Security Administration did release a new ruling in April. That is related to WIMPERS. That's a wellness integrated and medical expense reimbursement plan, and SIMPERS, a self-insured medical expense reimbursement plan. Now, you've probably heard us talk about PTR plans, which is a payroll tax reduction plan. Whenever Jesse or myself are talking about those, this is what we're talking about: WIMPERS and SIMPERS. PTR plan is just that's our branding and what we call it. And before we go into this IRS ruling and the tactics that the IRS uses, it makes the most sense for us to run through a quick example of what these programs are. So Jesse's going to do that for you. So Jesse, the floor is yours.
Okay. So here we have an example of an employee pay stub who's making a gross salary of $5,000 a month. You can see here a $260 contribution to their group healthcare plan, making their net before taxes is $4,740, you see highlighted in yellow. Below that, you can see the taxes that are being withheld, making their net take-home pay this $3,561 down here at the bottom. After the program is put into place, you still have that $5,000 gross salary with that contribution to the healthcare plan. But now notice that we've layered in a $968 gap plan premium here, pre-tax. This is going to drop the taxable income down to $3,772. And notice the difference in tax dollars that are being paid. Post-tax, there's going to be a benefit claim payment that can be deposited into the employee's bank account one of two ways. The first way is from the outside gap insurance provider. It will be direct deposited into the same bank account that they get their normal direct deposit on the exact same day, but it will come as two separate transactions. The second way, which has been, it's been less popular up until recently, but that's actually putting the benefit claim payment back into their paycheck or pay stub by that TPA. The important thing here is that the employer can never take constructive receipts of that post-tax reimbursement. Now, the difference between that claim payment of $800 and the gap plan premium, that's going to be the actual cost of the gap plan. In this case, it's $168. Now, that cost is going to be entirely funded by that decrease in tax dollars. So instead of paying that money to the IRS, we're going to be able to use that money to fund benefits. Now, the difference between taxes that are being paid here is roughly over $300. And now that we took out the $168 for the actual cost of the gap plan, that leaves $170 of what we consider to be quote-unquote tax credits. These actually aren't tax credits, but a benefit reimbursement and the money left over from that.
Real quick, Jesse, yeah, we generally like to call them recaptured tax dollars. So these programs are funded with recaptured tax dollars.
Yeah.
Pardon the interruption.
Now, if we let you keep that, it would increase your net pay, which unfortunately we can't do per the IRS. So we turn around and we spend those dollars on some sort of healthcare or life insurance policy. In this case, just to make it simple, we just put all the money in a whole life plan, but these benefits are customizable and we'll go into which benefits you can choose from later on.
Yeah, well, to give a little more clarity before you jump on there, Jesse. So it cannot be those dollars cannot be applied towards health insurance. It can be an ancillary health benefit, such as the gap insurance. In this example, we're using medical gap insurance, but it can be hospital indemnity insurance, a wellness type plan. Just for this example, though, we're using the gap insurance. But and as I mentioned, those recaptured tax dollars cannot be used to contribute towards your major medical plan, or something such as like a 401k. It has to be a insurance benefit that falls under what's called a cafeteria plan, sometimes also called a Section 125 plan, because we're utilizing Section 125 of the IRS code. So pardon again for the interruption there, Jesse, but
And I
take it
appreciate it,
away
man.
again.
So just to go back to the numbers one last time, the monthly tax burden has now been reduced by $338. The $168 is being applied to pay for the gap insurance. And then the rest of that, which is the $170, is going to be used to customize additional benefits for the employee. Now, the example that we used is a gap plan premium number of an individual, whereas this next example would be a family plan. The only difference there is instead of having one plan for the individual, you'd have multiple plans, one for you, one for your spouse, and then one for your children.
The numbers that Jesse showed you are pretty general numbers. So don't take those to heart. We're just trying to explain how a whimper or a simper works. I hate those names, but that's what we're given. And it really makes sense for us, obviously, to explain what they are before we go into what this IRS ruling is solidifying and the changes that it's making. So the difference between a SIMRP, that's a self-insured medical expense reimbursement plan, and a WIMPER, a wellness integrated and medical expense reimbursement plan. Well, with a SIMRP, the employer has to be offering or sponsoring a major medical plan for its employees to participate in. Now, the employees do not need to be on that employer's major medical plan in order to participate in the SIMRP, but in order for the employer to offer a SIMRP, they do have to first be offering a major medical plan. Now, generally, what we see with the SIMRP compared to the WIMPER, and again, pardon the tongue twisters you're going to hear. So, with a SIMRP, generally the employer is going to have lower tax savings than they would with a WIMPER plan. And generally, the employees are going to have more recaptured tax dollars to apply towards those benefits than with a WIMPER plan. So, big overview, I guess, would be that the SIMRP is a greater tax benefit for the employer, and a WIMPER is a better tax benefit for the employees. Also, with the SIMRP, the employees are required to spend down the recaptured tax dollars. If they do not spend those down, they are supposed to pay taxes on them. However, that is self-reported, so it's up to the employee to do so. When we put these plans in place, we do because we don't ever want an employee to be in a position where they didn't pay, you know, they could owe some taxes or have some sort of tax liability. We always structure them in a way where the employee is spending down those recaptured tax dollars with the WIMPER plan. So one of the big changes with the WIMPER plan is now, especially under this new regulation, the employer does not need to be sponsoring or offering a major medical plan in order to offer a SIMRP. I'm sorry, a WIMPER. And as I already mentioned, the WHMPR plan is going to have a greater tax benefit for the employer compared to the employees on a CIMR plan. So WHMPR is better for employers, CIMR is better for employees, and as we've already covered, employees are generally going to have less tax dollars than they to or recapture tax dollars to apply towards those benefits than they do with a CIMR. Now, the other thing here, and there's a reason there's an asterisk there. So it says that employees are not required to spend down those tax dollars. We haven't found anything in the IRS code that actually legitimizes that. We've heard that from administrators and carriers, but we haven't seen anything in the IRS code that says that they do not need to spend down those tax dollars. We've just been told that. So again, we're still spending down those tax dollars, and we structure these plans where the employees are spending those tax dollars, because these programs are not designed to increase the employees' take-home pay. They're designed to give the employees better benefits. And if we are utilizing these plans to increase the employees' take-home pay rather than give them better benefits, well, that seems pretty clear-cut abuse of the IRS code. And obviously, the IRS is not going to be happy about that. So, you know, it's for us, it comes down to that old saying, you know, you can't have your cake and eat it too, right? So you're still, the employees are still going to get a great benefit, but we will not structure these plans in a way where we are increasing the employees' take-home pay. That goes into a gray area of the code, and we don't want to do that. Now, I want to get into the tactics of the IRS briefly. The IRS likes to release these memorandums. If you're unfamiliar with what a memorandum is, they're most commonly known as a memo, right? I think that they call it a memorandum sometimes to make it a little bit, to add some emphasis maybe, or make it seem a little bit more serious than it is. And a memo is supposed to be used for internal use. It's not supposed to be something that really, you know, you don't see companies releasing internal memos. For some reason, the IRS does. And there's two specific memos or memorandums that occasionally come across our desk. Someone will be participating in this plan, or it's a tax professional has a brief, quick little heart attack because they go, oh no, I ran into this memo. Well, if you look at the memo itself, it clearly says there, this advice may not be used or cited as precedent. If you're unfamiliar with what that means, it basically means that this is not worth the paper it's written on. This is some guy, some dude or gal, their opinion. And I would say clearly their biased opinion, because they're all employees of the IRS. And if you're still concerned about it, they always have a phone number there. Feel free to call that number. If you don't believe me on this, I have called the numbers. Every time I see one of these memos come across my desk, I always call the number. I have never been able to get a hold of anybody, let alone the authors of these memos. So I view this as a scare tactic. I find it pretty unethical. But occasionally they do come across. And here's the other one. Same thing. This is something used to kind of scare employers away from participating in these plans. As you can see there, again, it says this may not be used or cited as precedent, and it has the same number there. If you do decide to call these numbers and get a hold of any of these individuals or get some clarity, please let me know. I have never been able to do so. Jesse has never been able to do so. But the most important thing there is it says this advice may not be used or cited as precedent. Now, the big ruling here, and when we release this recording, we're going to cite all these sources. We'll give you access so that you can go look these up yourself. We're not going to go through the whole 237-page ruling that came out on April 3rd. But the ruling, it's 237 pages long. And well, first, let me get to how this ruling came about. So we had constantly been asked, is there a revenue ruling on this? Has this ever been challenged? These programs have been around since the 80s. Until recently, they had never been challenged. There was never And we never thought there would be a case where they were challenged because we were very confident that if they were, that the IRS would lose. And that's exactly what happened. In 2022, the IRS challenged a third-party administrator and a broker that was implementing Whimper and Semper plans. And in 2022, that case went to court and the IRS lost. So what you would expect is, all right, well, so take it on the chin, they lost, no big deal. It's not exactly what happened. What happened was then they changed their verbiage briefly or slightly, and they brought the same case to court again in 2023, and they lost again. So they were all but forced, well, I guess technically forced to release this ruling. What's interesting is out of the 237 page long ruling, less than 3 pages are actually relevant or related to the cases or challenges that the IRS lost. The vast majority of this ruling is around deceptive marketing of these type of fixed indemnity and ancillary insurance programs. And again, that seems like they're trying to bury the relevant portion of it because that's never been an issue. Everybody is fully aware. If you've ever gotten any type of insurance policy, it's you're getting a small encyclopedia, and it has to do with the fact that you cannot use deceptive marketing. You have to be very clear on letting people know the type of insurance they are getting. That's nothing new. But if I were a betting man, I would say that maybe, you know, they're trying to glass over or gloss over the relevant portion of why these cases were brought and what it's allowing and the fact that they lost these cases because it also, you know, the IRS and DHS and they don't explicitly say, yes, we lost these cases, right? So, but if you go to Section D of that ruling, and as I mentioned, we'll include the links for it. Section D there states, like other forms of accepted benefits, fixed indemnity accepted benefits coverage does not provide comprehensive coverage. Rather, its primary purpose is to provide income replacement benefits. Benefits under this type of coverage are paid in a flat, fixed cash amount following the occurrence of a health related event. So as Jesse showed you in that example, those people are getting that benefit claim payment. That is a fixed amount, which is allowed, and it's after the occurrence of a health related event. But again, in this ruling, the IRS leads you to believe that that health related event has to be something as you got sick, you were admitted to the hospital, something along those lines. That's not what the definition of a health related event is. The definition of a health-related event, you can see those five bullet points there, but the two important ones are health concern or issue with indirect relationship to health maintenance, right? So that is that can be something such as a medical expense type reimbursement plan that is focusing on preventative care, and that's exactly what these programs do, is they provide tools and resources so that people are very involved in preventative care, which is, yes, health maintenance. That other bullet point there, research topic focusing on health events and populations. And yes, this data is used for research. Now, that doesn't mean that employees are giving up all sorts of personal data, but you know, these are used for focusing or doing research on health events and populations. But the big thing there is, yes, that health-related event, you participate in these programs, that is a health-related event, and that allows you to get those fixed cash reimbursements that, as Jesse mentioned, could be direct deposited to your bank account or can be done through payroll. So what are some of the major highlights and changes with these plans? Well, as we've already covered, employers now have the ability to offer free, they're not technically free benefits to their employees. They're paid with recaptured tax dollars, but they're able to offer these benefits to their employees that do not have a change in the employee's net or take-home pay and without offering a major medical plan. and that is done through the WHIMPER model. The other big change we're seeing now is the savings for the employer is significantly higher. Not a big change in the savings or recaptured tax dollars that the employees have. However, one of the big changes that is related to the employees is the ongoing participation requirements are less stringent. So prior to this ruling, there was a huge push to be overly compliant. And what most carriers were requiring were these ongoing check-ins with health coaches, dietitians, et cetera. It was still pretty minimal. You know, it could be an employee responding to a text message or receiving some literature, that sort of thing. But those ongoing participation requirements for employees are much less stringent, and it makes it easier on the employee. The benefit claim payments, so those reimbursements the employees are receiving, they could be done through payroll prior, but a lot of administrators and carriers kind of stayed away from that because they wanted to have another degree of separation. Now, we're seeing a lot of those carriers that are doing it through payroll because it's just a much easier process for both the employer and the employee. And it also goes to that next bullet point there. Enrollments are much easier. And that really makes it easier for people like Jesse and myself. But the result of that is that enrollments can be done in what's called an opt-out, right? So instead of employees having to opt in and go through and select benefits and meet with like a benefit specialist, that sort of thing, you can still do that. But you're seeing hybrid models now where employees are given both options where they can meet with a benefit specialist and customize those benefits, or there's kind of a basic package that'll be, you know, maybe something like that gap plan that Jesse spoke about in an accident and life insurance plan. But there's kind of a set package that employees will receive if they do not decide to opt out. So they really don't have to do anything to participate in these plans. With the opt-out model, they would actually have to do more because they'd have to actually decide to opt out. And this is actually resulting in much higher participation rates, which benefits both the employer and the employee. The employer receives the tax savings only from employees that participate. So you're seeing higher participation rates, which is resulting in higher tax savings for the employers. And with those higher participation rates, you're seeing more employees get better benefits. And one of the most important highlights and changes I believe that we're seeing from this is now there are AAA rated and A+ carriers that are offering indemnity protection to employers that participate. What that means is if an employer participates in these programs and they're still concerned about the compliance, validity, et cetera, well, these are very large carriers. You know, we're talking A+ rated, AAA rated. So, you know, think like the Allstate realm of insurance carriers that'll offer you protection if there's an audit or challenge brought to that employer. It doesn't cost extra to get that protection. They're offering that now because this has been fully legitimized.
So there you have it, folks. If you've had the mental bandwidth to stick around this long, I thank you and implore you for your mental dexterity. And as always, any like, share, follow, comment, or any type of interaction with this video or podcast is not only greatly appreciated, it is a phenomenal and free way to support a veteran-owned and operated business.
This presentation and all material within it are for informational purposes only and does not provide tax, legal, accounting, or financial advice. Any view and or opinions expressed by speakers are not representative of Finance for Thought, FFT, their affiliates, or affiliated brands. Please consult your own tax, legal, or accounting professional before making any decisions.